This past week was the clergy conference for all the clergy of our diocese here in North Carolina. We gathered together for 3 days with our bishops, and each year there's a different topic. Someone usually presents during the retreat, kind of facilitates it. It's 3 days, and it was in Winston-Salem this year, where it's been the last few years. I had to leave a little early, actually after the first night. Wasn't feeling well, and I went to the doctor the next day, and I've been on antibiotics for a sinus infection and some powerful cough medicine, so I've been a little out of it the last few days. And also, I was up till pretty late last night watching the Yankees-Tigers game. Before I realized I got to get up at 5:30, I better go to bed. And Derek Jeter broke his ankle last night, so it's not a good day for Yankee fans. So hopefully I can focus and share some thoughts with you this morning. The clergy conference, there were a couple people who were the presenters. And they were there because we've been exploring in our diocese new forms of ministry, the new shape that ministry can take in our time. As you know, that we are in what is referred to as some sort of a shift or transformation in church life today. I don't mean just in the Episcopal Church, but in church life in general. As an example, I saw this statistic just yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to really explore it more, but it gave this statistic that in 1990, about 47% of the population in our country attended church on Sunday. This particular report was saying in the year 2010, that number was 27%. So you're among the 27%. Who find this something of significance in our lives, to gather together like this. So something is shifting. Something is changing. And how do we look at that? And this whole Galilean initiative that we have in our diocese of looking to where is Jesus? Where is the Holy? Where is God in our world? And to go there and join with Jesus, join with the Holy, join with God to do ministry there. In other words, rather than looking for how do we bring people to come to the church, how does the church go to where the people are already, where the congregation is? And so at this conference this past week, there were two speakers. One is a Mennonite minister who does ministry in downtown Raleigh, street ministry, working with the homeless, working with those who have no place to be. And his ministry is not one of a church. There's no church, there's no building, a little office where he can work out of, but no real building to speak of. And he is supported by the gifts and donations that people give for this ministry to happen. Another presenter was a woman who has started to live in what is referred to as a neo-monastic community. Have you heard that phrase? It's a phrase that's been around now for about 5-6 years. I've been hearing people who are trying to respond to an authentic way of living their Christian life. And this is a community of people, lay people, who live in a home in Durham, and they live in a part of Durham where not many people would probably choose to live. This woman is married, has children, and there's a couple other people who live with them. And together they form this community, almost like a monastic community. Living together, they have jobs, they work, but their ministry is one of presence in the community, offering hospitality and engaging with that community to offer a different perspective, different way of living together. It's called neo-monasticism. And so these two individuals were at this conference to kind of share their call, their way of living out this gospel. So that and this gospel reading today have invited me to share these thoughts with you this morning that I'd like to present to you. The early Christians, those first followers of Jesus, lived a Christianity that might be very different than our experience, quite different than our experience today. We may be able to read about or hear about it, but perhaps it's not an experience we have. Those early followers of Jesus wanted to walk in the way of Jesus. Christianity at that time was called the way. And they lived such an authentic life that they lived a life that was sort of pushed up against the culture, pushed up against the power of its time, trying to proclaim the gospel. And their lives became endangered by that style of living. For instance, they lived under Roman rule. Did you know that one of the titles of the Roman emperor was the Son of God? There are archaeological digs that have been made, and there are these arches in the old Roman Empire that proclaim that the emperor, the Roman emperor, is the Son of God. Well, those early followers of Jesus said, you know, no, this Jesus who we follow is the Son of God. The Roman emperor was proclaimed as the Lord, and these early followers of Jesus said, no, this Jesus that we follow is the Lord. And we can hear those phrases, Son of God, Lord, and we give them a very much a religious significance or a religious understanding. But can you hear that in that context? Of standing up against the power of that time, against the Roman Empire, and saying this rabbi, this Jewish rabbi who we follow is the Son of God, is the Lord. So they were really challenging that time. And they lived in persecution, they lived in oppression, they lived a very different lifestyle than we today experience, because they were pushing against the walls of power, pushing against what was accepted at that time. But historically it says that the Roman emperor, around early 300s, Emperor Constantine at the end of his life, he became a Christian. He was actually baptized a Christian. But early on, he made Christianity the religion of the empire. There's a lot of history about why that happened, but it happened for the sake of what I'm sharing with you this morning. And Christianity became the religion of the empire. Now, some historians, there's different takes on that. Some historians will say that was actually the end of Christianity and the beginning of Christendom. Others say, by Christianity becoming the religion of the empire, it gave Christianity the ability to spread to the then known world, and eventually to the wider world. Different takes on that. But whatever take you have, I think you'd have to admit that the Christian experience became much different. When you're living and worshiping under the ground in the catacombs, as an oppressed and persecuted people, and all of a sudden now you're walking in the basilica with the powerful and engaging in power, your perspective changes a little bit. Some would suggest that perhaps at that time, Christians began, when you're surrounded and part of the power, perhaps you begin to soften the edges of the gospel message. Perhaps the Beatitudes become a little softer, and perhaps we don't challenge as much the world around us. Whatever your take is on that history, that's an observation that has been offered. But what we do find is, once Christianity became the religion of the empire, there were those within the Christian tradition who began to feel called to a style of life, to what they felt was a more authentic call to Christianity. They felt called to leave that experience of Christianity. For instance, Saint Benedict, who we know is the began what we now know as the Benedictine community, kind of said to followers that he was with, look, I'm leaving this. I'm leaving this empire living, and I'm going to live in the desert. I want to be more in touch with an authentic living of Christ. Does anyone want to come with me? And people, men and women, joined him in the desert, living this monastic life. And Benedict put together what's now known as the Rule of Saint Benedict, almost 2,000 years later, monastic communities still follow. Hundreds of years later, people like St. Francis, we celebrated the Feast of St. Francis a couple of weeks ago. Francis was somebody who felt called. He looked around at the power of the world around him and the power of the church, and he felt a call to live with the poor, to live with the oppressed, to identify there, and he invited others to join him. And they became known as the Franciscans, living what they felt was an authentic life for themselves. And so all through history, you see people trying in many ways to regain that authenticity of those first few hundred years of Christianity and live it out in their own lives. And so at this conference, this clergy conference this past week, we heard from a few people who felt this is their call to live this authentic way. One who ministers in the streets of Raleigh to the homeless, someone else who lives in what's called a neo-monastic community with others in a community in Durham, a ministry of presence and sharing in community. And so as we gather together today, what I invite you to is, what is your neo-monastic calling? What is your particular ministry? Whether that person has a ministry to the streets of Raleigh, this community has a calling to live in Durham and have a particular presence. What is your calling? Oh, maybe it's not as dramatic as that. But you're here. You're part of that, if that poll is correct that I saw the other day, you're part of that 27%. You wouldn't be here unless you're searching for more. You're searching for a depth. You're searching for meaning in your life. And where are you finding that? How can we nurture that and feed that? How can you call us as a community to live into that? As we engage in this visioning process here at St. Paul's over the next few weeks, we'll hear in a few minutes from Ted, I think, who's going to tell us about the visioning process. How can you envision St. Paul's responding to that authentic call to walk in the way, to walk in the way that Jesus walked, to respond in our lives to make a difference? As we gather together today, I invite you to see our community of faith as a place to gather, a place we're called to share our wealth, our resources, our time, our treasure, to share who we are, as those early Christians did, to make a difference, to transform this world. May we go forth this day, living in the power of that dream, the power of that vision, and be called to the true self that each of us searches for. And we come here to nourish and feed as we go forth into the world.